Hey everyone, welcome to this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. My name is Jamie Lasanti, and usually I am existing only in the background of these podcasts, but today I'm going to take the reins and we're going to call John Wertheim from Paris. You've probably seen him on set and on the grounds at Roland Garros, and so we'll bring him in now. John, how you doing?
Good. How you doing? Long days, but no complaints.
We are here in New York. You're there in Paris. We're on day 5, Thursday. We're still waiting for the rest of the night's results to come in, but tell us what kind of has been the biggest news around the grounds so far. I mean, we see your recaps and all of the news every day, but what's the biggest story floating around?
I would say we haven't seen a colossal upset yet. We saw number one seed Angie Kerber go out the first day, the first morning, but I don't think a whole lot of people expected her to last long. It was almost an upset that more people weren't that shocked by the upset. But I think it's been a very emotional tournament. I would say that would be a theme. Emotions bubbling. We saw Steve Johnson mourning the loss of his father and winning a tight match. We saw today, I don't know if this is gone viral yet, but we saw Nicolas Almagro have to retire mid-match and Del Potro go to the other side of the net and console him and then stay with him at the chair. We've had the unpleasant runaway emotions of our assaulting wild card, who has been banned for the rest of the tournament for an act of, I think the term was for the press release was inappropriate. I think it's known more familiarly as assault. You can watch that video as well. So this has been a week so far anyway, not a lot of colossal upsets, but a lot of sort of secondary storylines. Most of them, if I had to write this up, I would build a theme around emotion.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about today's biggest one with Del Potro and Almagro. I mean, watching, and I don't know where you were, but at first him on the court almost sounded as someone was laughing. You didn't even realize, you know, how inconsolable Almagro was when he fell to the ground. I mean, what were you thinking when you were watching that? Can you give us any details?
You know, I was on the TV terrace, which is right behind the court, and everybody started standing up, and I could see people taking their phones out, and you sort of said, well, that's strange. It's the middle of a match. Mm-hmm. You know, two veteran players, but it's not as though, you know, Nadal's playing. Why is everyone taking out their – I could only see one half of the court. And then I saw the video, and it was excruciating. You're right. It sounded as though it was laughter. Instead, it was these keening sobs. And this is a guy in Almagro that's tried to come back from injury many times. This was once a top player who's really struggled with injuries for most of the last 5 years. He's back. He takes a set off Del Potro. Life's good. And then he has that knee injury, and it was terribly uncomfortable to watch. And Del Potro, who also knows from injury himself, I mean, he was saying too, they've known each other since the juniors, so it was a real act of compassion and empathy. But these are two guys that have known each other for, you know, 10-15 years. It was you know, I mean, these are opponents, but they're also colleagues. And I think I wrote this, that you can be trained by an agent or a handler or a media relations manager to anticipate questions or to behave in a certain way, but that was just unscripted, instinctive sort of decency. It was a very poignant scene, but you also wonder what this means for Almagro, who's 31 years old, and you sort of had the feeling this had a little bit of last hurrah on it already. You sort of wonder big picture about the rest of his career.
And the crazy thing was that it wasn't only him who was sort of feeling, I mean, just kind of moments before, it looked like Del Potro was kind of going to pull up and say, and retire. You know, I think he said he felt something in his groin in the middle of the first set. I mean, obviously the match was, you know, one set all, you know, because it was kind of, I feel like that made it a little worse, that it wasn't just him kind of struggling along the whole time. But, you know, as you said, an act of sportsmanship for sure, but I don't think Del Potro, he faces Andy Murray in the third round, but I don't think this win feels that great for him, you know, moments after.
Yeah, I think you're right on both counts. I mean, I think nobody wants to win when your opponent is retiring, especially when they're, you know, when they're rolling over in pain. But I think the other thing is that Del Potro has his own health concerns now. And we'll see what, you know, he has the extra day to recover. So that's good. But we'll see how he, what kind of shape he comes out against Murray. Not that Murray had an easy David himself, but, you know, Del Potro's had durability issues in the past, and best of five is going to be a challenge in the best of times. So you injure your groin and 48 hours to recover doesn't, that sounds like a day off, but that isn't a whole lot of time in the big picture.
And the other kind of emotional scene was yesterday. And I mean, we saw the video of you talking to Stevie Johnson right after the match. What was that like for you, just from the perspective of having to talk to this guy? I mean, he, again, in tears, kind of still coping with and dealing with everything with the loss of his father. An incredible situation. He wins, you know, moves into the third round. Tell us a little bit about that conversation with him after the match.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked about these before. You do these post-match interviews, and you're just kind of hoping not to end up on YouTube. I mean, the risk-reward ratio is a little bit skewed. In a best-case scenario, they're sort of forgettable, and you do your job, and they have high potential to go sideways. And I was, you know, there by the side of the court, and if sort of you talk to the winner, and usually it's, how'd you fight through? What were you pleased with? These sort of benign questions. And you know, obviously no one knew this would happen, but Steve Johnson was very, very, very emotional. And I'm standing there, and I tried to sort of make, I mean, you know, I know him a bit and know his coach, and I sort of tried to make eye contact as if to say, listen, if you're not game for this, you're not going to get ambushed. I sort of tried to let him know it was okay if he wasn't ready to talk, but he stopped, and it was, you know, but so suffice to say, my questions about coming back from a breakdown in the fourth set were pretty irrelevant when a guy is in that sort of emotional state. But I think, I mean, people looking at social media, I think people were very sympathetic to him, as they should have been. And
other players,
you know,
as well.
His dad was his.
Other players as well really kind of showed their support.
Yeah, I think, you know, in many ways it's an adversarial sport, but it's also a community. And everybody sort of has known about the story and what Steve's been going through. And I think what's interesting in this case is that his dad was also a tennis coach. So, you know, you lose a parent and you go about your job. And if you're going to your dentistry practice or you're going to be a carpenter, it might be an escape. But I think he's out there playing a sport that his dad was, you know, the dad was the architect of his game. So I suspect this wasn't any sort of escapism or anything like that. I mean, I suspect his dad was very present, given that he was performing a job that his dad trained him to do. So, you know, quite understandably, it was a very tight match. It had controversy. I mean, he was penalized on match point. I mean, he had everything, and he hit that one last forehand, and I think all that sort of, all the neurochemistry caught up with him.
I wanted to ask you about another kind of off-court story that you had said you're going to be paying attention to ahead of the tournament. Have you heard much of Maria Sharapova around the grounds throughout the tournament, or has other kind of stories sort of pushed that aside?
It's funny. I expected it to be a bit more of a story, especially given how controversial the wild card denial was. It really hasn't come up much. I mean, it's sort of been pushed aside by a lot of things. Some of it is just the tennis. Some of it is, you know, who knew Margaret Court would emerge from under her rock and pop off? Who knew that there would be a sexual harassment complaint against a player? I mean, a lot of sort of secondary storylines have pushed that away. I think, you know, Sharapova will play Wimbledon qualies, and it does look like those will be televised. So, I mean, there's been a bit of news, but it's been interesting to me how little actually this Sharapova story. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's won this twice in the last 5 years, and this was a controversial decision by the Federation. They put it on Facebook Live, and it really, I haven't heard much discussion at all.
Fair, that's fair. What about some of the on-court results? Anything particularly surprising to you? Anything, anyone quietly that has kind of snuck through in these first 5 days that we haven't really heard about, but we may be hearing a lot about headed into week two?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we all knew the women's draw was going to be wide open, and that's what it's proven to be. Keep an eye on this young up-and-comer Venus Williams. who is almost 37 years old, but is very much in the mix. I think this Ans Jabeur of Tunisia is a great story. She's not going to win the tournament, but she was a lucky loser. She got in at the last moment, and now she's in the third round, and she's guaranteed herself $136,000. And I looked it up. I think the median income for household income in Tunisia is about $4,000. So she has, earned generational wealth by winning two tennis matches, and she's the first Muslim woman to get to the third round of a major. That's been a nice story. On the men's side, Young Chun, the Korean player, is in the third round, and it's I think everybody's looking forward to that Nadal Djokovic semi on the men's side, and think of that as the de facto final. And neither of them has dropped a set. Djokovic 2-0 with Coach Andre Agassi, and then the women's has been sort of the tournament we all thought it would be. That we drafted players on Tennis Channel. Everybody got five draft picks before the event, and Paul Anacone has dropped four of his five, and one of them was down a set today, Svitolina. So that's sort of what we expected going in, and it's kind of living up to this wide openness.
You mentioned the Djokovic-Agassi era and partnership has begun. Do you think that, it's obviously been big news. He's always on the camera during Djokovic's matches. Do you think that that is sort of a distraction, a good distraction off of Rafa in this case? Kind of everyone looking to defending champ. Is that something you think is happening?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that, Nadal comes here. He's won this event nine times. He's obviously the favorite. That's good news for him. The bad news is anything less than victory and it will be a disappointment. That's a lot of pressure, but I think you're right. I think the storyline really shifted, especially when Nadal played as well as he had and Federer pulled out, it looked like Nadal's tournament to lose. Mm-hmm. Then Nadal lost in Rome, so I think that, I don't think it sort of diminished expectation, but it didn't make it look like a foregone conclusion. I mean, there are players capable of beating him, and then Agassi comes along, and I think you're right. I think that might have the effect of, Nadal's still going to, every time he practices, there's going to be a crowd. He's still going to be the favorite, but I think in the last 10 days or so with the Djokovic coaching announcement, I think that has taken some of the focus away from Nadal, no doubt.
Anyone you're kind of picking to see into the second week that maybe we really haven't heard about so far?
I picked Mladenovic to win, who's obviously never, she's never even made a Grand Slam semi. Mm-hmm. And she was down, she was a few points from losing her first match, and it seemed she's sort of set her back and seized up, and it did seem that way, but I think there were also a lot of nerves involved. And she survived. She won her next match. I stick with her as my pick. Otherwise, I think that there will be some names that people might not recognize in the latter rounds, but I don't think, I think you will have heard of the winner. So, Pablo Cuevas, who's I'm looking at right now on court, is that someone that can make the quarterfinals very easily? Yes, absolutely. But I'm not sure this is an event that – on the men's side, it would be shocking if it weren't Nadal or Djokovic. On the women's side, I still think there's a level that separates – Cece Bellis, young American, has played very well, won two matches. She's in the top 50. She's still a teenager. She's not ready to win Grand Slams, though. So I mm-hmm. think if we're talking about a winner, I think it's still going to come from one of about a dozen names on the women's side, and then – The men, I think, is really a two-man race.
Were you surprised by the way that Garbiñe Muguruza kind of fought back in her match yesterday and kind of how she came back? I know a lot of people kind of didn't think she was going to defend her title, and then she sort of, went down a set there and really had to kind of dig deep, and she has some two tough early matches so far. What do you think of how she's playing?
Since winning this tournament last year, she's really dropped off and hasn't won a title and has taken a lot of losses. And at some point, things regress to the mean. You're not going to win every match, but you take, you take double digit losses on the year in mid-May, and that has to exact a price on your confidence. She had a tough first round match against Schiavone, who won here before. Then her match yesterday against Kontaveit, who had beaten her already earlier this year. and she showed some nice fighting. And at some point, it sounds trite, but confidence may be abstract and hard to quantify, but it really exists. And I think those were two big wins for her. I mean, if she had gone out early as the defending champion, it would have been bad for the tournament. It would have been bad sort of for optics, but it would have been worse for her. Mm-hmm. And now that she's won two matches, one by beating a tricky player and simplifying what could have been a complicated match, and the second one by just essentially out-battling the player on the other side of the net, I think now she becomes probably the favorite.
Wow. Over Venus.
Halep never won this thing, and it sounds she's barely playing 500 ball in the year, but you sort of go down the list and who would you take in front of her?
Venus.
With my pick, but
yeah, also your pick. Well, yeah, and my pick, Svetlana Kuznetsova. Another one. She had a tough match yesterday too.
That's a good pick. That's a good one.
Any other storylines we should know about around the grounds? Insider only Paris Roland Garros information.
The U.S. is leaving the Paris Accords. I don't know if that news crossed the Atlantic. No, I don't. You know, the thing about these tournaments is you need to timestamp it. So right now it's 6:30 on Thursday, local time. And, who knows? Right now it's actually been a fairly calm tournament from a seeding point. We lost the top women's seed, but I don't think anyone, again, thought of that as a huge upset. But 24 hours from now, it could be a very different conversation and a very different tournament.
All right. Thank you. We'll check in with you again next week.
You got it. Let's do it again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
All right. Thanks.
All right, everyone. That was this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. That was John Wertheim checking in from Roland Garros in Paris during the first week of the French Open. Be sure to check out si.com/tennis for all your tennis coverage. You can follow us on Twitter at SI Tennis. You can follow me on Twitter at JD Lasanti, and you can follow John on Twitter at John_Wertheim. We are bringing you all the coverage of all the stories from Roland Garros, and we'll check in with another podcast next week. Thanks for listening and enjoy the tennis.